Dream Songs, George R. R. Martin, by Gardner Dozois. Although he's been a major player in several different genres for more than 30 years, has won Hugo Awards, Nebula Awards, and World Fantasy Awards, George R. R. Martin has finally made it, beyond the shadow of a doubt. The sure and certain sign of this is that someone else's book was recently advertised as being in the tradition of George R. R. Martin. When you're successful enough, when your books sell well enough that publishers try to entice customers to buy someone else's book by saying that it's like yours, then you've made it. You're a really big-name author, and no argument is possible. If you doubt me, think of the other writers whose names are invoked with the phrase, in the tradition of, to sell books. J.R.R. Tolkien, Robert E. Howard, H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, J.K. Rowling. That's pretty heady and high-powered company. But there's little doubt that George, who, with his epic A Song of Ice and Fire novel sequence, has become one of the best-selling and, at the same time, most critically acclaimed of modern fantasists, belongs there. Although, if you'd told young George, the unpublished eager novice, that one day his name would be ranked in such august company, I'm sure he wouldn't have believed you, wouldn't have dared to let himself believe you, believe such an obvious wish-fulfillment fantasy. Another thing the young George might not have believed, and something that many of his legions of present-day fans might not even know, and one thing that this collection is designed to demonstrate, is that George would become prominent in several different fields of endeavor. George has had respectable careers as a science fiction writer, a horror writer, a fantasy writer, a writer and producer for the television industry, and as an editor, compiler, concept originator for the long-running Wild Card series of stories and novels by many different hands, which has now reached its 16th volume, with the 17th on the way. What George has accomplished in each of these fields would satisfy many another professional as a life's work, one to be bragged about, in fact. Not George, though, the greedy swine. He had to go and reach well-deserved prominence in all of them. Born in Bayonne, New Jersey, George R. R. Martin made his first sale in 1971, and soon established himself as a mainstay of the Ben Bova analog with vivid, evocative, and emotionally powerful stories such as With Morning Comes Mistfall and Seven Times Never Kill Man, The Second Kind of Loneliness, The Storms of Windhaven, in collaboration with Lisa Tuttle, and later expanded by them into the novel Windhaven, Override, and others. Although he was also selling to Amazing, Fantastic, Galaxy, Orbit, and other markets during this period. One of his analog stories, the striking novella A Song for Leah, won him his first Hugo Award in 1974. By the end of the 70s, he had reached the height of his influence as a science fiction writer, and was producing his best work in that category, and some of the best work by anyone in that period, with stories such as the famous Sand Kings, perhaps his single best-known story, which won both the Nebula and the Hugo in 1980, The Way of Cross and Dragon, which won a Hugo Award in the same year, making George the first author ever to receive two Hugo Awards for fiction in the same year, Bitter Blooms, The Stone City, Star Lady, and others. These stories would be initially collected in Sand Kings, one of the strongest collections of the period. By now, he had mostly moved away from analog, although he would have a long sequence of stories about the droll interstellar adventures of Haviland Tuff, later collected in Tuff Voyaging, running throughout the 80s in the Stanley Schmidt analog, as well as a few strong individual pieces such as the novella Night Flyers. Most of his major work of the late 70s and early 80s, though, would appear in Omni, at the time the best-paying market in science fiction, the top of the SF short fiction food chain. The late 70s also saw the publication of his memorable novel Dying of the Light, his only solo SF novel. By the early middle years of the 80s, though, George's career was turning in other directions, directions that would take him far from the kind of career path that you might have forecast for him in the 70s. Horror was starting to burgeon then as a separate publishing category in the early and middle 80s, and George would produce two of the most original and distinctive novels of the great horror boom period of the 80s, 1982's Fever Dream, an intelligent and suspenseful horror novel set in a vividly realized historical milieu, still one of the best of modern vampire novels, and 1983's big, ambitious, rock-and-roll horror apocalypse, Armageddon Rag. Although still considered a cult classic by some, Armageddon Rag was a severe commercial disappointment, and would pretty much bring George's career as a horror novelist to an end, although he'd continue to write horror at short lengths for a while, later winning the Bram Stoker Award for his horror story The Pear-Shaped Man, and the World Fantasy Award for his werewolf novella The Skin Trade. Although most of George's horror was supernatural horror, he'd also do some interesting work during this period with science fiction horror hybrids, including the above-mentioned Sand Kings and Night Flyers, two of the best such stories ever produced, perfectly valid both as science fiction and as horror at the same time. The fact that the great horror boom of the 80s was itself beginning to run out of steam by this point, with stores pulling out the separate shelves for horror they'd put in a few years before, and publishers folding their horror imprints, probably helped George with his decision to turn away from the horror genre. Increasingly, though, he'd turn away from the print world altogether and move into the world of television instead, becoming a story editor on the new Twilight Zone series in the mid-80s, and later becoming a producer on the hugely popular fantasy series Beauty and the Beast. Highly successful as a writer, story editor, producer in the television world, George had little contact with the print world throughout the mid-80s, although he did win another Nebula in 1985 for his story Portraits of His Children, and throughout most of the decade of the 90s, except as editor of the long-running Wild Cards Shared World Anthologies, which reached 15 volumes before the series faltered to a stop in the late 90s. It has made a resurgence in the new century, though, after a 7-year hiatus, so that Wild Cards is back in business as I write these words. By then, soured on the television business by the failure of his stillborn series Doorways to make it onto the air, Martin returned to the print world with the publication in 1996 of the immensely popular and successful fantasy novel A Game of Thrones, one of that year's best-selling genre titles. The rest, as they say, is history. Genre fantasy history, but history nevertheless. The novels and stories in the A Song of Ice and Fire sequence have maintained their popularity throughout the rest of the 90s and into the first years of the new century, and even built on it. All three volumes to date have won the Locus Award for Best Fantasy Novel in their respective years, and all three have been on the final Nebula ballot. A Game of Thrones was also a finalist for the World Fantasy Award, and A Storm of Swords was a finalist for the Hugo Award. A freestanding novella taken from A Game of Thrones and published in Asimov's science fiction, Blood of the Dragon, won Martin another Hugo Award in 1997. What is it that has enabled George to captivate readers in so many different fields? What qualities are there about George's work that ensnare readers no matter what kind of story he's telling? For one thing, George has always been a richly romantic writer. Dry minimalism, or the coolly ironic games of postmodernism so beloved by many modern writers and critics, are not what you're going to get when you open something by George R. R. Martin. What you're going to get instead is a strongly plotted story driven by emotional conflict and crafted by someone who's a natural-born storyteller, a story that grabs you on the first page and refuses to let go. You're going to get adventure, action, conflict, romance, and lush, vivid human emotion, obsessive, doomed love, stark, undying hatred, unquenchable desire, dedication to duty even in the face of death, unexpected veins of rich humor, and something that's rare even in science fiction and fantasy these days, let alone the mainstream, a love of adventure for adventure's sake, a delighting in the strange and colorful, bizarre plants and animals, exotic scenery, strange lands, strange customs, stranger people, backed by the inexhaustible desire to see what's over the next hill or waiting on the next world. George is clearly a direct descendant of the old Planet Stories tradition, probably influenced by Jack Vance and Lee Brackett in particular, although you can see strong traces of writers such as Poul Anderson and Roger Zelazny in his work as well. In spite of having long been a mainstay of analog, science and technology play little real part in his work, where the emphasis is on color, adventure, exoticism, and lush romance, in a universe crowded and jostling both with alien races and human societies that have evolved towards strangeness in isolation, and where the drama is often generated by the inability of one of these cultures to clearly understand the psychology and values and motivations of another. Color is a word that can't be used too much in describing George's worlds, and if you let him sweep you away with him, he'll take you to some of the most evocative places in recent SF and fantasy, to Mistfall at Castle Cloud on Wraithworld, to the endless windswept grasslands known as the Dothraki Sea, to the cold ancient maze of the Stone City, to the bristlingly deadly oceans of Namor, to dusk over the high lakes at Khabarijan. The most important reason, though, why so many readers are affected so strongly by George's work is the people. George has created a gallery of vivid characters, sometimes touching, sometimes grotesque, sometimes touching and grotesque, unmatched by most other writers, one rich and various enough to be reminiscent of Dickens. Damien Harveris, the conflicted and tormented inquisitor of the Order Militant of the Knights of Jesus Christ in the Way of Cross and Dragon, and his boss, the immense aquatic four-armed Grand Inquisitor, Torgathon Nine Clarice Toon, in the same tale. Sean, the desperate survivor fleeing from ice wolves and vampires across a bleak landscape of eternal winter toward a stranger and more subtle danger in Bitter Blooms. Tyrion Lannister, the Machiavellian dwarf who comes to shape the destiny of nations in A Clash of Kings. The obsessed and ruthless games player Simon Cress in Sand Kings. The wistful ghost in Remembering Melody. The grotesque, creepy, unforgettable pear-shaped man in the story of the same name. Leah and Rob, the doomed telepathic lovers in A Song for Leah. Haviland Tuff, the neurotic but clever albino ecological engineer with the power of a god at his command in the stories collected in Tuff Voyaging. Daenerys Stormborn, daughter of kings and reluctant Khaleesi of a Halasar of Dothraki horselords on her way to face her destiny as the future mother of dragons, and dozens more. George cares deeply about all of his people, even the spear carriers, even the villains. And by caring so deeply, he makes you care for them as well. Once you've mastered this magic trick, you don't really need another. That, above all else, is the thing that has earned George his place among all those other in the tradition of folk listed above. And it is the thing that ensures that no matter what field he chooses to work in, people will read him, and want to read him again.